We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome to the Barcelona Podcast, episode 147. I'm Missile Opinions, brought to you by the most influential voices in the FC Barcelona community. I'm Dan Hilton, and today's show is a little different. With no games to worry about and transfer news still quiet as of today, and I say as of today, this is Tuesday, I decided to change things up a bit. For today's show, we're going to be talking about something important to Barcelona and Catalan culture, and that is food. So not much football talk, but we are talking about food aplenty today, with a little bit of football talk at the end. And to help me do this, I'm joined by the author of Catalan Food, Culture and Flavors from the Mediterranean, and a talented chef and restaurant owner, Chef Daniel Olivella. How are you today, Chef?
Very well, sir. Thanks for asking. Just getting the day started here in Austin.
So again, you are based in Austin, and so the first things first that we want to ask, I'd love to hear about your journey from Barcelona to the U.S., and then how you got into the restaurant business.
Yes, sir. That seems like a long time ago now, but was born in Vilafranca del Penedès. It's a city now. It was not as big when I was a little kid. In the outskirts of Barcelona, about 30 miles south of Barcelona, in the wine, and it's the capital of the wine region called Penedès. I was a very curious little boy always. My parents were able to take us to France and to Germany and to travel through Europe. So the traveling bug has always been on me about learning about other cultures and seeing other parts of the world. So being a little boy under the beginning of the democracy in Spain, the end of the Franco's years, I was brought up in a society that I thought it was a little backwards, it was a little conservative, it was not much of a bright light society. I grew up in a very gray space somehow as a kid. So when I was a little kid, I joined, like most of us, without knowing what we were doing, political organizations that at the time they were illegal. My parents got a little worried about that, and since I was putting more time about fighting for freedom than studying, they decided to send me to Chicago, where my mother had a brother that owned a restaurant there, to see if he could straighten me up and make me study. So that worked, luckily. So in September 1979, I was just 18 years old, they decided to ship me from Vilafranca to Chicago. When I got there, I had always cooked at home. I had always had a lot of curiosity for food, but I never thought about becoming a chef because it was not a very glamorous job. I remember as a kid not even meeting the chef whenever we went out for dinner. Rather, you always met the maitre d' or the guy that was in charge of the dining room. You never would even hear about the chef nor expect the chef to create any type of meal that was worth more than my mother could cook at home. So I moved to the United States with the desire to become a professional musician, a professional jazz player. That's what I was doing already in Spain, studying music. I joined the American Conservatory of Music in Chicago. But at the same time, I was working in my uncle's restaurant. I was working in a lot of restaurants and by the time I was 23, 24, I could see that I was going to be a better cook than a better musician. And by that time, there was no organic farm-to-table food. There was no local ingredients. Everything was based on knowledge and ethnicity a little bit. But I started hearing through the grapevine that San Francisco had places like Chepanese, like Zuni, that they were farm-to-table oriented. They were following the seasons. So my curiosity, and plus the fact that I've always didn't like the cold winters in Chicago, and I was curious about California, made me move to San Francisco. And that's luckily where I landed in 86, I think 1986, with the idea to pursue a career as a chef, perhaps, and maybe as a musician. I didn't have everything clear. And luckily, I was already taught how to work in any aspect in the restaurant. My uncle had an amazing background, very traditional background in high-end French restaurants. So he taught us, or he made us work at his place. So we did table car service and double tablecloth. I mean, the old traditional Caesar salad on the side of the table, steak tartare on the side of the table, deboning the fish, opening the bottles, decanting them, the old bottles of wine. So I had a lot of experience, so I could defend properly any position in the restaurant, from bartender to waiter to cook. But when I went to San Francisco, I found Zuni Cafe, which at the time it was one of the most unique places, I thought, because the way they ran it, the way it was such a farm-to-table approach, good double, good burning oven, good burning grill. So that's where I did a lot of my apprenticeship. I was able in November of 1999 to open after many different job positions and working many different chefs. I was able to open B44 Catalan Bistro in the financial district in San Francisco with some investors, not having a lot of knowledge of finances, but, you know, asking questions here and there, we were able to pull it. B44 became perhaps one of the first Catalan-themed restaurants in the United States. My idea there was to stay a little away from tapas, toro, sangria, and flamenco. I didn't want to have, not that I don't like these things, but I wanted to identify myself as a Mediterranean Catalan restaurant. And it worked. It worked very well. I got a lot of awards. Nobody was aware that we could do different rice dishes, rabbit dishes, monkfish dishes in Catalonia with great olive oil, with great vegetables. So being San Francisco such a foodie city, even then, I was able to create a nest for my style of food, which, as I said, it gave me a lot of credibility, and it got me on the map as a professional chef without me really searching that. All I wanted is to make a living, get married, have a family, little kids, and all I wanted is to get ahead. I was fortunate enough, too, that I grew up in the business in the United States as chefs became trendy, as restaurant business became trendy. So from one day to the other, I was a guy that wanted to be a chef. Then I went to a guy that was talked about in newspapers and TV programs and magazines. And I could not make sense out of it because I never thought that food was going to become so popular. But I rode the wave. I rode the wave the best way I could. And B44 became very successful. We opened then a place in Oakland called Bar Lata, a little tapas bar. People got more and more familiar with Spanish food. It seemed at the beginning that Spanish food had no room, that everything was French or Italian.
Yeah.
As far as European food. Then there was Mexican, of course, and Japanese and Thai and all these Asian cuisines. But little by little, Spanish food started becoming respected. Luckily, we had the big boom of Ferran Adrià becoming the best chef in the world with his El Bulli restaurant. Not that I do food of El Bulli, rather I do more traditional food, but I was one of the people in the United States that reaped the benefits of that because all of a sudden, Spain had a gastronomy of its own, which didn't exist until then.
Yeah.
So we opened Bar Lata Oakland in 2008, and or 2007 and 2008, the big recession hit California. I was already coming to Texas to work for a supermarket called Central Market, which there is about 12 stores in the United States, in the whole state of Texas. I would come once or twice to teach for them. And in the middle of the biggest recession, we lost the value of our home. Our business in Oakland was suffering. The business in San Francisco was suffering. My wife lost her job. And we decided to move to Austin because we thought it was a brighter future for us and the family. Came here, spent 2 or 3 years commuting from San Francisco to Austin. Because like most of the projects, you require a lot of money to open a business. Took a while to find the finances and to find the space. And then probably around 2012, we were able to open Barlata Austin. And that's how where we are right now. My food, now we do tapas. I think it's a better time to do tapas now than in 1999 because people understand more the way of sharing food. But if my food now is based in tapas, it's still based flavors in the Mediterranean flavors, which is my style of cooking.
Yeah. Well, and you say that, you know, tapas and paella are dishes that I think most people recognize that exist in other cuisine. But what do you think sets apart the Catalan versions of these dishes?
The Catalan, you know, I defend a lot my cuisine as base, as one of the most influential or the most authentic Mediterranean styles of cooking. Mediterranean diet, it's been spoke a lot about it lately as being the diet of the longevity. And it's basically a diet based a lot with extra virgin olive oil being one of the main key ingredients of it. Mm. A lot of vegetables, nuts, grain, seafood, obviously, and small. And when you talk about protein or animals, we use a lot of small game, rabbits, and so on. So I think that what differentiates, particularly at least for me, it's the fact that we use a lot of these ingredients in Catalan cuisine. Paella is a dish that is done throughout Spain, or arroz, the rice dishes rather than paella, because every rice dish is not only a paella. There is arroces, there is fideos, there is paellas. But I believe that those ingredients that I mentioned before, the way we roast the vegetables, the way we stew them, they take apart a little bit from what Spanish cuisine is. And in Spain, it's a place that even if it's a small country the size of Texas, food is very predominant there, even if it didn't become popular outside of Spain. I think in Spain, not only Catalonia, but all over Spain, we go an extra mile to feed ourselves properly. You can see in Catalonia and Barcelona, people live in very small apartment buildings rather than a house. They drive a small car or no car at all. They don't travel too far away. They stay very local when they go on holidays. The majority, I'm talking. But when it comes down to it, they make the biggest effort financially that anybody can imagine. Going out of your way to get the best mushrooms, going out of your way to get the best shrimp and small seafood, and so on, so on. So I value that a lot, you know. But it is hard to say what exactly is the difference between Catalan food and Spanish food, but I think I would base it more of a proximity of the ocean. We are also very influenced by France, being a border with France, so you find seldom sauces or styles of cooking that they're related to France. And we also have incorporated a lot through the years, a lot of things from Italy. If you look at the geographically, how the Mediterranean is set up, Barcelona is the biggest seaport of the Mediterranean. It has been like that for years or centuries. So it has always been a place of merchandising and trading, a lot of places coming and going, spices coming, spices leaving. And so I think that differentiates a lot Catalan food from the rest of Spain, that influences from these countries that they're so close to us.
Yeah, I mean, I really like that the way you explained how basically, one of the foundations of obviously of Catalan cuisine is the Mediterranean, and that obviously influences so much of the cuisine. And so, with all that said, you also discussed about tracking down mushrooms and different vegetables. And Do you think when making Catalan dishes at home, you know, for people, not just in restaurant, but when people try to make these dishes at home, do you think the acquisition of different ingredients is the hardest part? Or do you think it is actually the methodology when you're, you know, creating these recipes?
Exactly. I think the ingredients, you know, I don't believe that, you know, everybody tells me, or Spaniards or Catalans, when I meet them in the U.S., oh, I cannot find this, I cannot find that particular ingredient. I think the most important is to build the base of the dish with authenticity and with good flavor. If you build a base of a dish with a good sofrito, a good stewed vegetables, a good broth, yes, then I think it's better to use your local protein that you can find around yourself. So I think most important for me is to interpret flavor more than interpret ingredients.
You're answering kind of my next question. When attempting to make these dishes at home, where do you tell most people to start? And obviously, other than recipes from your book, but are there more simple dishes that you would direct people to try to, you know, get their feet wet in when making at home?
Of course. I mean, I think the most important thing to cook at home properly, first of all, is to acquire a habit of going shopping periodically. You know, if you don't cook at home, you know, you go once, twice a month, fill up the freezer. But if you're a person that likes to cook often at home, most important is to educate yourself, to know the seasons, to understand the seasons, and to understand that you got to go shopping often. In Catalonia, we go shopping every single day. Every single day. You might not buy onions every single day, but you don't get 5 kilos of onions. You get 8, 10, 12 onions, and then you go back and get some more. But everything that's protein-oriented, you buy that daily. You don't get fish today to eat it in 2 or 3 days. You go in the morning to the fish market to eat fish that day. You go to the butchery to eat meat that day. So that, I think, it's the first key important of a home cook, is to know how to shop properly and to make an effort to do that. Second thing I believe it's very important is to build a great pantry in your home, that you have all your spices and all your olive oils and vinegars, nuts and everything that you need at any given moment. And then we're very blessed in the United States because people here are, or at least myself as a chef, I see that Americans have a very open-minded palate, which is hard to find that in Europe. In Catalonia, when you talk about Moroccan food, it seems like if it's from another planet. When people talk about Greek food, nobody is interested in that. They're all interested in the region and regional things, which it's great, but as I say, I think one of the biggest assets of my customers or Americans here is that they discovered food, good food, 20 years ago maybe. I don't know exactly how many years ago, but it's a recent trend, and it's amazing how fast it took off. I've been here for 40 years in the United States, and when I rewind my memory, I remember people coming to my uncle's restaurant in 1980 and ordering trout with coffee. And I thought, how can people eat trout with coffee? So that's four years ago, and America has taken big, big, giant steps. So as I say, you know, I think it's important going shopping. I think it's important to build yourself a good pantry, and then to try the dishes not only once, twice, as often as you can to perfection them, and then be patient. You know, food, especially Catalan food, it's based a lot in stewing, in slow cooking, and waiting your time. You know, you cannot make a good paella, a good rice dish in 10 minutes. You know, you need hours to do that, and you need the patience, and you know what I mean, and building all that steps I told you before, the shopping, the pantry, and then just trying it and making sure, as I say, that the basis of the sofrito, the basis of the broth, the basis of that you build. There's one thing that we do a lot in Catalonia. It's a lot of dishes, but with a picada. Picada is basically a pounded combination of things that you put in a mortar, you get a wooden handle, and you pound them to the point you disintegrate them. There is picadas with almonds, with pine nuts, with chocolate, with little liver of the rabbit. There's picadas with ñora peppers. There's many types of picadas. And that's one of the particular things, and I talk about that on my book, how important it is to finish always with a picada, which is going to give you flavor, and it's going to give you texture at the same time.
Now, my last cuisine question for you here is a little bit of a personal one. We did talk before about the influence of France or French cooking and Italian cooking, obviously also sitting on the Mediterranean, and how that has impacted Catalan cuisine. But I do love cheese. And so my question, I guess my final question about the cuisine is, where do you think cheese and something that is so big on the palate, how does that influence, or how does that fit, I should say, into Catalan cuisine?
I mean, we're next to the Pyrenees. We're right there, and we have a lot of goats. I mean, cheese, it's all over. For us, majority of the cheese we eat as is, with a little piece of bread at the beginning of the meal or at the end of the meal. But as I say, geographically, where we're located, you can see that there's got to be cheese in Catalonia because we sit in the foothills of the Pyrenees. So I don't know if I'm answering that your question, but
no, certainly you did.
We grew up very cheese-oriented, and you know, when we talk about cheese as an example, one of the things that, and that's my opinion, I'm a believer, that the fact that Spain didn't participate in the First or Second World War, it allowed us to maybe become a little isolated from Europe, but also it allowed us to keep tradition much more than other countries, that they were overdeveloped quick to be able to restore the foundation of the country that was destroyed through the wars. So Spain, being such a off-the-beat path country for many years, I think it was able, or Catalonia, to retain the tradition a lot. So we were never manufacturing big amounts of anything.
Mm-hmm.
So everything, especially cheese, when I think about cheese, you still go to places and the you know, every little town in the Pyrenees has their own style of cheese. And that, I think it was, before it was commercialized, the cheese, it was a way of people to self-feeding themselves.
Right.
So I think the quality is great, and the abundance and the reception of people, it's great for cheese.
Yeah, that's a terrific answer too, just about how different cuisine in Spain has been so separate, and the tradition and the traditional food that is made has stayed for all the reasons you mentioned, for so many years and decades. I know I've read about Basque cuisine, really trying to stick with the pillars that have been with Basque cuisine for hundreds and hundreds of years. And we did already talk about the foundation of how fishing and obviously the Mediterranean Sea have been at the epicenter of both those styles of cuisine. And now to pivot, we're going to shift. This is a podcast about FC Barcelona. And Chef, obviously I brought you on because you're also an FC Barcelona fan. I guess we'll start with, how long have you been a fan? And are there any players that in the past have stuck out to you, and that obviously when you were younger and around Barcelona going to the stadium, who stuck out in your mind?
Well, Johan Cruyff. Johan Cruyff was the I think, I mean, we talk a lot about Messi right now, and Messi's an amazing player, but I think that when Johan Cruyff came in 1974-75, he was amazing. Yes, obviously, 99% of us Catalan kids grew up liking Barca. It transcended more than a soccer team. It was a way, going to the Barca stadium was the only place you could really speak Catalan. It was the only place that you could scream in Catalan without getting, you know, harassed by the police. It was the only place you could go for years to, as I said, to speak your language. So it became more than a soccer team, Barça. It became a place for Catalans to believe that someday we could get out of the Franco's oppression. So there is a sentiment we say in Catalan, Barça, or Barça es més que un club. Barça is more than a club. Because even if you're not crazy, I grew up playing basketball. I was a cyclist and a basketball player. I tried soccer as a kid. I think I was a better basketball player. Basketball, but we all love Barça. Beyond just being a team of soccer players, I think it's more something that you have engraved inside you that represents your culture. And as I say, for me, the player I have enjoyed the most by far was Johan Cruyff, as a player, as a coach, as a person that changed the face of Barca. Without him, I don't think that Barca would have been what it is right now, because he's the guy that created the tiki-taka, which is that I pass it to you, you pass it to me, then Guardiola perfectioned it, and then we were lucky the last years to have Messi there. Messi has been a very humble guy as far as I'm concerned, that goes there, gets beat every game, but he gets up and he's a winner. But as I told you before, I think that Barca as an entity, because Barcelona is not only the soccer team. Barcelona has a basketball team, has a hockey mm-hmm. team, has a volleyball team, a handball team. It's got a lot of different sports teams associated under one FC Barca.
Yeah.
So it, for us, it's more, as I said, than just a team. It's a way of representing our culture, especially when Franco was alive. He swept so much for Madrid, and I mean, there was a player called Estefano, which, anyway, I could go on and on for about this now, but
right.
As I say, I think Johan Cruyff was, for me, the guy that by far changed the whole concept of soccer.
You know, I'm glad you even brought the basketball team up. There was big news in the past week about the Barcelona Lassa, and that is that Milwaukee Bucks forward, who was part of that team with Giannis Antetokounmpo in the NBA, who were the number one seed in the Eastern Conference Finals. They have a forward, Nikola Mirotic. He was a longtime NBA player, has decided to really shock the NBA and return to the EuroLeague to play for Barcelona. So as far as the entire Eurobasket, it's Barcelona who brought in the number one talent, and that is Nikola Mirotic from the Milwaukee Bucks. So a big get for FC Barcelona's basketball team going into next year. And on the point of Johan Cruyff and you watching him come to the club, I think in today's day and age, I just want to have you give some context now, I guess, to some of our younger fans, that when Cruyff came from Ajax, he was at the top of his powers. That was a gigantic transfer for Barcelona. It wasn't just about Real Madrid buying the most popular players. Barcelona got the guy in world football when he came over from Ajax. So where do you think you stand on transfer rumors that are, as you're watching them even this summer, between Antoine Griezmann and Neymar, and just Barcelona continuing to go after these big names? Do you think that this is different, or how is this different than when Barcelona were getting a guy like Johan Cruyff?
Well, I think it's different. I mean, when Johan Cruyff came, there was him and Hugo Sotil. Spain allowed only two international players, so the majority of them were guys that they grew up playing in Barca. They were Spanish guys, so that's a big difference. Right now, you look at the Barca team, and yes, it's an amazing team, but there's Gerard Piqué, there's Jordi Alba, there's a few guys that they come from the cantera, but sometimes it, for me, I think it lost a little the charm that they pushed the local guys to play good, and you were able to bring only one or two or three foreigners. Now there's a lot of foreigners, and yeah, it's great to have maybe Neymar coming back, but I don't know if it's as great that he left and he's coming back for these fortunes of money. So myself particularly, even if I still like Barca, I think when you start looking at these numbers of amounts of money, of millions mm-hmm. of millions of euros, it doesn't make sense sometimes, because I'm a person that likes to support minorities a lot. And when you look at the amounts of money you get spent in soccer versus the amount of money that one worker makes in Barcelona, it's completely distortion. So I have my own particular thoughts about all that. Even if I like Barca to be the best team in the world, I don't like that these transfers, they go on with so many millions of dollars, honestly, because Spain went through a big recession, and they say if you're an old person cannot pay for the apartment, they kick you out. That should be not happening. But anyway, this is my way of thinking. And talking about the Barca, I'm glad Nikola Mirotic joined Barcelona. I'm good friends with a lot of the basketball players. I was in a great wedding this weekend from one of the megastars of Barcelona, and I know a lot of you inside, but I'm happy that Mirotic is going to be there. I hope FC Barca becomes the European basketball champion again.
Yeah, terrific. I mean, there have been some fantastic players known on the global market. Obviously, Pau Gasol, Marc Gasol, both NBA champions, got their start at FC Barcelona. Then you have a bunch of former players, even currently at FC Barcelona, Washington Wizards old forward Chris Singleton and the like, Gonzaga, Kevin Pangos. So Barcelona is a destination, as you're saying, not just for the soccer team or the football team, but also for basketball, for handball, and particularly as you came on to talk about the cuisine. But as we know, again, the lifeblood of FC Barcelona is that football team. So my final question for you about, you know, the football team, what are your expectations for this coming season?
Hey, Champions League. If you don't win the Champions League, you can win as many leagues in Spain that I don't think they count anymore. I hope. I mean, the thing is, like, when you look at the budgets of some of the teams, and this is my particular view, you cannot compare Barcelona and Real Madrid should sweep every week and every Spanish team by 7, 8, 9, 10, 0, because the budget of one of the players of Barca is more than the budget of the whole of the team. So I think the future should be making a European league that has the best teams, the most powerful teams, the most financially the successful and strong teams. And I think in our days, you know, unfortunately, Real Madrid doesn't win a lot of leagues, but they win a lot of European championships. Unfortunately for us, Barca fans. And I think that the best title that in Europe that a team can win is the Champions League. So I'm a believer that they should be, and I think it's going to happen eventually, because Liverpool, Juventus, Paris Saint-Germain, Ajax and Barca, Madrid, I mean, Manchester United, Manchester City, these guys, they're in another league, Bayern de Munich. They should make a league for these guys. And in order to become a member of this elite, you got to show a lot. Because as I say, you know, it's impossible that any other team arises to the surface. Because financially, I mean, we never heard as a kid about Paris Saint-Germain, for example. Mm-hmm. What happened lately, some guy from an Arab country took over the team with a lot of money, and then Paris Saint-Germain become a team. They haven't won anything. But you know what I'm saying? That it'd be great if in America, sports has a salary cap. Basketball has a salary cap here. And that doesn't exist in Europe.
Right.
I think salary cap should be something they should impose. Because I don't think it's fair that, as I say, that one team player, it's more valuable than a whole other team. That's my opinion, you know. But finishing answering your question, it's, I think, Champions League for a team, it's got to be the most precious trophy. And that proves the fact that it's so hard to repeat. So few teams have won 2 years in a row the Champions League. While the Liga in Spain, Barca has winning it for a long time right now. Not every year, but it goes sometimes 2 or 3 years in a row that they win.
Yeah, I agree. And I think some of that disparity, too, comes from the TV contracts and the broadcasting rights. So much of that money in the Liga going to Real Madrid and Barcelona, because they're the teams that people tune into. They're the teams on TV. And we also know that in so much of Spain, take, for example, if you're in Mallorca or if you're in a smaller city in Lyon, that you're going to be a fan of your local team, but then you're also a fan of Barcelona or Real Madrid. And that's always such a big distinction in Spain, that so many people have two teams that they root for, and one of those teams other than their local team winds up being one of the big two. And then you also mentioned too that if rumors are to be believed, that with the money that comes in from the Champions League being such a disparity to other teams, and you even look at Arsenal in England, and you know, the Premier League is a big example here, that if you miss out on Champions League football, you'll have a hard time in the transfer window competing with the four teams from the UK that did make it to the Champions League. And obviously, if one of those teams win the UCL or win the Europa League, that changes things too, because they automatically qualify and things like that. But yeah, certainly, I think that there is such a disparity in Spain and in I guess globally, in not just the world, but in Europe in particular, that there is a disparity in talent. And we see that more and more as the transfer windows over the last 2 or 3 years have gone, you know, completely bananas. For sure. Now, Chef, I want to ask you before I let you go. You've mentioned your restaurant, so I want to give you a quick plug on that again, your restaurant in Austin. And I also want to give you a quick chance again to plug your book. Now, obviously, we're going to have all that stuff down in the show notes. You can check that out. And then, and finally, where can people also find you online to track everything down?
Oh, well, in Austin, Texas, most of the time. But if you go online, you follow the Instagram of Barlata, and then you can follow whatever we do. I spend most of the time here. We travel to Spain as much as we can, but Austin is where our home is.
His book is Catalan Food, Culture, and Flavors from the Mediterranean. Chef Daniel Olivea, it was such a pleasure to get to talk to you today, not just about Catalan cuisine, but about the FC Barcelona football team and the basketball team. Thanks so much for joining the show, Chef.
My pleasure. Muchas gracias.
And thanks so much to you, the listeners, for tuning in again. You can tap in your app and check out the show notes to subscribe to the show. And you can also find us on social media, too. We're on Twitter at the Barcelona Pod or at HiltonD13 for me. And on Instagram at the Barcelona Pod. Our closed Facebook group is tbpod.link/group for deeper dives, discussions. That's where we get our normal La Ronda questions. And you can help us out on Patreon to continue making these shows at tbpod.link/Patreon. We're now also on YouTube at the Barcelona Podcast, and while we did talk about transfers today, including Johan Cruyff and Neymar, I've got a YouTube video coming out later this week about Barcelona's most expensive transfers ever, so keep a lookout on there. You can subscribe to the YouTube channel, and you'll be notified when that comes out later this week, so smash that subscription button. So thanks so much for listening to this, the Barcelona Podcast. Until next time, we'll talk to you soon, and Forza Barça!